Now on Food FM, it's a new series with Arthur Potts Dawson, The Coffee Table. First of all, a word from our sponsors. Founded in 1927 by Giuseppe and Bruno Bambi, La Marzocco had its beginnings in Florence, Italy, birthplace of the Italian Renaissance. It seems only fitting that La Marzocco would earn a world-renowned reputation for making beautiful, high-quality, superbly crafted and uniquely designed espresso machines with great attention to detail. Even today, highly specialized personnel supervise each stage in the production of every single machine, handcrafted to order for each and every client, from the kitchen counter to the specialty coffee bar. The Coffee Table on Food FM with La Marzocco.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Hi, I'm Arthur Potts Dawson. I'm super excited to be bringing you live from the Coffee Festival in London, a Food FM exclusive of The Coffee Table. I'm here with Marco Arrigo and we are interviewing Paul Kelly. Paul, you're the GM of La Marzocco UK, and this is the first coffee festival back since COVID and Brexit. So how's it looking for you and how's it feeling for you today?
It's really exciting to be back. Thank you guys, by the way, before I jump in there. Arthur, Marco, great to be sitting on the sofa next to the coffee table with you and be back sharing this experience. First time back on the festival floor since 2019. It's really exciting, you know, the energy's back in the room. You've got a lot of roasters here, a lot of coffee shops here, a lot of coffee consumers and a lot of coffee lovers. And I think looking at the smiles on the faces and the interactions and the enjoyment coming from people drinking coffees is great to see.
I mean, coffee is such an experience, isn't it? It gets people talking, it gets people enthused. But what I've felt since I've been at the festival is there's a real community here, isn't there?
Oh, completely. I think it's great to see, and I think it's such a natural thing to stand there, have a coffee, share an experience, but then push that experience and ask questions, get more knowledge. And that's what we've seen grown throughout this festival over the 10 years. You know, it started with 5,000 people, 2011. We're now pre-COVID was around 31,000. It's come back down to around 20,000, but people are here for the love of coffee and to get an experience, to get knowledge. The likes of Marco here, talking to people, giving information. It's really important.
Yeah, Marco, give us a little point. I mean, you've been coming to the Coffee Festival for ages. Obviously, you're Mr. Coffee. What's your feeling of the festival and what do you think about the community and how people share ideas through this type of festival?
I think what I really always liked about the coffee community and the new, I mean, let's call it what it is. This is the speciality community. It's different to the community that we had before. And it reminds me so much more of the mixologists that in the bar scene, the mixologists were global. They knew each other globally. Oh, he's from the so-and-so Hong Kong. He's from this, you know, place in Sydney. And everyone knows these famous global places. And then there was this link in the community. Speciality Coffee's done this. They've linked up as a community, the famous roasters, the famous coffees, the famous places. They've linked up like the bar scene did 5-6 years ago, and they know each other, and it's so lovely to see. I was very brought up in the old-fashioned sort of coffee industry, the more institutionalized big old brands where you despised your competitors and you know, but this is all like, hey, everyone really loves each other. They're complimenting each other. They're tasting each other coffees. I haven't heard a bad word in this room, you know, and that's really nice to see.
So it's more a healthy competition within a community. But Paul, tell me a little bit about the community, because obviously we've been through the grinder, COVID, Brexit, you know, Britain has sort of been chopped away from Europe. And for me, Europe has always got fabulous coffee. What does the coffee industry look like for you at the moment?
I think it's an interesting point. I think if you think back to maybe the first crisis, 2008, the restaurant industry changed. You know, the likes of Jamie Oliver, yourself, you started to bring really interesting produce, and out of necessity, people had the same £5 to spend, but they'd spend it on that better experience. So you saw a sector of that mid-range restaurant pub food grow, and that experience of people's knowledge around cooking, around ingredients grow. But it's the same with coffee. You know, we didn't have a massive coffee culture in the UK. And then around 2008, when the crisis hit, the first financial crisis, the Aussies, the Kiwis arrived, and they gave a different experience. And when they arrived, the hospitality, the passion excited people, because we were really a tea culture, apart from the groundbreaking work that Marco did way back. You know, there was a tea culture, but people embraced it. And now we're in 2021, and that cafe experience, the coffee community, is stronger than ever. And I think it's really interesting to see the next steps now coming out of another crisis like COVID for restaurants and for cafes, is the opportunity that young people have, yes, to take a risk, but it's a risk they can afford to take because there are deals to be done on property, on things like that. And we're going to see a new wave of young people coming out and opening spaces and doing things differently.
But Paul, tell me a little bit about the relationship, because Le Marzocco is obviously a leader in the field of coffee machine making, but you've got relationships with roasters, which then pushes on to people who take their coffees onto the high street. I've just tasted a fantastic chilled iced oat milk coffee, really, really good. So there's a sort of new wave, like you say, of young people coming into the industry, but are there enough? How does Le Marzocco support them? And what should we be doing over the next 18, 24 months? Because a festival like this should be celebrating the future.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I know Marco will have an opinion on this and jump in shortly. But it's really interesting because, you know, Le Marzocco, we try and work with people, and we want success across the chain of experience. So we want the roaster to be able to bring on a new client and support them to open a business. That business is successful, the roaster is successful, and then we are successful. But it needs to work from the outside in, rather than us trying to move a box. We've got to work from that coffee shop being successful, so then they can go on to open one, two, three, and then it's a long partnership. The roasters we have here, we've worked with for a number of years, and we've watched them grow, and seeing them or having a space where they can bring new coffee shops in and we can get to meet them is great. I think the challenge we have, as in the restaurant sector, is that we are missing a skill set of baristas that is critical for people to open coffee shops. You know, and I think there's a lot of narrative pushed, oh, it's because of Brexit, it's because of COVID. It doesn't matter why, it's how we fix it. And I think there are so many opportunities to give a skill set to people who are less fortunate or have had different things happen in their life and they need to find a new role. And I think we need to work with different communities, different charities to train people and give them an opportunity. And I think restaurants and cafes run on the basis that you want to be served by nice staff. So let's find people that are good and give them the skill set to work.
So, Marco, the business of coffee, which is on the high street, which is in restaurants, which is in fest, I mean, you know, there's coffee everywhere and there's business everywhere. But I know that you're a fabulous provider of training to people. You train me in coffee. I've seen you train hundreds, if not thousands of people. So there's a skill set that you build through the knowledge that you have. Tell us a little bit about the importance of skill set and how that builds into business and how successful people can be having a skill set.
The training's everything. I mean, you can give somebody, a Lamborghini, and if they can't drive, it's completely useless. And, you know, having the knowledge to handle the product. Going back a little bit more to where Paul was, is that what's exciting at the moment is that it's almost like the forest has caught fire and now the young seedlings are going to come up from the root. Lots of old bad operators have disappeared. Lots of people with historic old places that were going round in circles are going nowhere. They're gone. Lots of places that weren't working have closed down too. And this is part of the fire. But lots of young, talented people have been given the keys to a place. Young chefs, not just in our industry, young chefs, young barmen, young baristas have got the keys to places. They would never have got the keys to that place in Soho 2 years ago. They would never have the money. Now that these people have got opportunities. And it's also unusual to see companies like Marzocco's, like the Lamborghini of the coffee machines, working with the community, not being aloof and above it and saying, you have to buy our expensive machines to play the game. But they're bending over backwards to pull these young people up. And that's sort of nice to see. They've developed their whole different tribe, the whole way. They haven't just sat on their laurels and said, you know, this is the most expensive machine, everyone aspires to it. But they've bent over backwards to, you can see here at the village, the little Linea Minis, the smaller Marzocco machines going out there. You know, it's the prize of these baristas to have that at home, you know.
So skill set, Apple is obviously vital for what we're looking at into the future. Marco, your point about the little shoots showing after this kind of wildfire of Brexit and COVID kicking into both UK and Europe and globally. Paul, there are people here at the festival that we probably need to talk to about, you know, what's the future of blending in different types of milks? What's the future of roastering? What's the future of business on the high street? How have you seen that through the festival, and how excited are you about all that?
I think how the industry is evolving as well is bringing in new styles of alternative milk, you know, new styles of coffee, you know, new different ways of roasting in terms of, you know, with a lighter filter. And Marco's going to jump on this, but it's interesting to see what people are doing. And every year when the festival is on, you see a different sector coming in. You know, 5 years ago, we weren't really seeing any of the alternative milks. Now you've got two or three really big players here. You know, you've got these different chais coming in. You've got these different chocolates. Mork here are doing fabulous milk, chocolate and things like that.
That's the thing, isn't it? The quality is improving. Every year we're seeing better stuff, better stuff, better stuff.
Marco, at the festival, are we seeing different notes inside the roasting, different beans coming out? What is it? Paul's talking about roasting and the differences now that maybe even 5 years ago has changed. Tell us a bit about roasting.
There's a lot of new roasters here, and it's an art. I mean, it's not something you can just start doing. It's not like, you know, I can go and learn how to change tyres on a car. In an hour, you're kind of doing it. This is something that takes years to perfect, and there's a lot of young people here learning how to roast and having their first experiences. There's you know, very similar green coffee across the board, really, in the room, but it's how you handle it, how you play with it. There's roasting oven people downstairs. There's till people. There's the whole width of the industry now coming into this room. And in some ways, it can go too far. There can be too many milks, and there can be too many till systems, and there can be too many. I think the point is, you come to a show like this, and you can literally open a coffee shop from everything that's at this show. There's everything you need at this show to do that, but there's also advice, and there's also training, and there's also every other part that you need. You know, what do you think, Paul, is different about this year? What have you noticed that's different this year?
You know, when you walk the hall, you know, even before you walk the hall, when you're setting up the show, you're talking to coffee shops and roasters to come and share our experience and take some time on our stand. But what you realise is there is a real lack of skill set, as I said before, because they're struggling to be able to come to the show and leave a cafe, because the people who own it are actually operating it, because they're in there every day. And I think it's really important that we find a fix for that, because no one can work 7 days a week, no matter how much they love they do. It's not healthy for mental health, for physical health, and then that loses that business passion. So I think it's really important that we do find a way, and at this show there are going to be a lot of different talks going on about training, about bringing people in, passion. And I think there's a lot of businesses that have worked really hard to get through COVID. You know, they say if you go to the gym every day, you'll become stronger. I think if you fight for your business to survive every day, you come out and you're stronger. And I think there's a lot of strong businesses out there, but they'll only stay strong with the lifeblood that runs through it, which is staff. And I think, you know, for all the listeners at home who are listening to this podcast, if any of you have got any interest in becoming a barista or a technician or, you know, whatever, and you want to work within the industry, reach out to either Lamazocco or Marco or Arthur and get some information, because there is a brilliant industry there. It's a lot of fun.
Do you think this is one of the things that, I think the average age of a barman in Italy is 40. What would you say the average age of a barista is in the UK?
I'd say between 22, 23. You know, it started as a bit of a transient role. Yeah. Then it built up very strongly into a role or a career.
Exactly.
And a passion. And then it's died off a bit because, you know, Arthur, you know more than anyone about how chefs, waiters, front of house have left the industry in the restaurant sector because of COVID. It's really how we entice them back and bring them back. And I think when we find an answer for one sector, we find an answer for the other.
But this is also an industry where people would leave and you'd find out because they just don't turn up Monday. This isn't an industry where people actually resign. they get paid on Friday and they just don't turn up Monday. And it's always, it's been up to now. I'm talking about up to now. It's been a little bit like that. It's not been, they say, well, what are you? I'm a barista. Oh, what did you want to be? Did you want to be a vet? You know? And it's this very much this approach. Whereas in Italy, it was very much a pride behind, I'm a barman and I'm a good barman. You know, I'm a barista and I'm a good barista. And it sort of doesn't matter. It's, there's no...
Oh, but Marco, walking around the festival and the little that I've seen of it already, but I can really see pride in all of the brands. I can see pride in the baristas. I can see interest, deep interest from the people who are visiting each stand. Because this really is, I mean, it's a healthy industry, although I'm not sure that it's been on its knees, but it's about, your point, Marco, I think is a brilliant one, is the fact that this sort of wildfire tore through our social and community structures, and we're now rebuilding, and then it is quite exciting. But I like your point, Paul, about, you know, if you want to get involved in being a barista, get involved in La Marzocco, give Food FM a call, drop me an Instagram message. There are ways to do this. But Paul, if we were to speak to a number of people in this festival today, who would you kind of single out, say, let's go and speak to this person or that person or this organization, because they may well be in 12 to 18 months a leader in the field, or maybe we need to look back at a well-structured company that's giving support and foundation to regrow this?
I think North Star, Holly and Craig from Leeds, North Star Coffee Roastery, really interesting, very passionate, very led on community, very led on support for their customer base. I think Sustain Coffee is a fantastic roaster who's just coming into the business, who's got a lot of energy, drive, speak to Mo about his focus and what he's trying to do, and engage. I think that's very interesting. I think for a alternative milk, Minor Figures, they've got a lot of energy. They're very out there, but they've got a really cool following and they do things in a very different way. So I think Brian's a great person to talk to. And I think from Brighton, you've got the Milk Shed, another young roastery that's just opened in Brighton. They've got a lot of experience in cafes, but now they're roasting for themselves and they're putting a lot of energy into it, and it's an exciting team there.
So do you think, is it people who have cafes that are starting to learn how to roast, do you think?
I think that's an interesting point. I think you've seen it in terms of that you've had a growth in you know, speciality chain would have one shop to five shops, you know. Grind, prime example, went to 12 sites. You do the numbers, you're buying roasted coffee from someone else. You want to control your environment. You want to control your product. You want to control the transparency of the relationship with the farm. Then you bring it in-house. So that's an interesting thing that we've seen happen with those small chains. And I think it is happening. But it's great to see roasters work with their coffee shop partners and say, listen, if you want your own coffee, if you want to roast your own coffee, why don't we do it with you? So they keep them and they grow them into their own micro industry or, you know, supplier, but they hold their hand while they do it. And it's kind of interesting to see that.
Can I ask a question, Arthur? It's just burning in my mind. And I was thinking, all these years that Marzocco's been in coffee, why have you never thought of making a roasting? Why have coffee machine companies never thought of making a roasting oven?
Because we like to support, and I don't believe we should play in other people's sectors. Is sometimes people say, oh, you should sell coffee, you should do this, you should do that. Well, we're a support mechanism in a whole industry. If we start to come in and take beats out away from other people, I think we're becoming kind of too controlling. You know, and I think it's great to be that we'll stand next to you and we'll see what other products you have to stand that will stand next to you as well, and we can all do this together, rather than be that one-stop shop.
So this is Food FM. I'm Arthur Potts-Dawson with Marco Arrigo here for the coffee table, interviewing Paul Kelly. Paul, it's been fantastic to listen to your points and your opinions about both this festival, but also the future and where we've come from. But it'd be great to have a little walk around, Paul, and chat to a few of the people on the stands here, because getting an understanding from their perspective would really help us to kind of drive forward what the conversation is for the next 12 months in coffee. So should we head off and speak to a number of people? We got them almost lined up, right?
Yeah, no, I've got a little tour we can do, and we can pass through a few places, and then we'll meet some really cool people and have a discussion.
The coffee table at the coffee festival. We're going walkabout.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
The coffee table with La Marzocco espresso machines, handmade in Florence since 1927.
Paul, thanks so much. You know, we've come now to speak to Holes. Why are we here? What are we talking about?
Holly and Craig, great partners of ours. Their roastery is in Leeds, which is a part of the North that I think is very exciting. The attitude that Holly and Craig bring to North Star in terms of commitment to quality sourcing, to training, to sustainability, and also to local community in Leeds is breathtaking in what they've done. So I thought it'd be really nice for you to chat to Holly, because she's an inspiration to people in the industry, and we want to attract more people like Holly into the industry.
Holly, you're an inspiration. Yeah, but you're an inspiration. And is it Holes? Do I call you Holes?
Yeah, Holes. Everyone calls me Holes, yeah.
Holes. So an inspiration to the industry. You've come from up north. You come down into London. Tell us a little bit about what you do, who you are, what the company does, and why coffee is so important.
Yeah, no. So we were the first roastery in Leeds in 2013. So it's kind of it was mental at the time. I think there was 60 in London, you know, but nothing in Leeds. And it was the third biggest city in the UK. So we came into it with the ethos of trying to build an industry that works for everyone. And I think that might be news to a lot of people that coffee doesn't currently work for everyone, you know. So there's big problems in the industry, and we dedicate all of our time to trying to bit by bit resolve them. Now, we're only small, but we try to sort of like work with other small like-minded people to create big impact, basically. So we dedicate a lot of time into training with coffee shops, trying to make careers for baristas more of a thing, you know, make hospitality staff more valued. And then on the producer side, you know, we kind of go really to the end of the earth to try to make our purchases as impactful as possible, get as much money back to the people growing the coffee, basically. So we're a team now of sort of 10 people in the roastery. We have our own coffee shop, and we supply around 270 coffee shops across the UK. And we're so happy to be here representing Leeds. It's an amazing industry to be a part of.
But training and education are obviously important, because that leads into the future. But it's also good for business. I mean, you know, sometimes you have to say, well, I need to train someone to be able to run a business for us. So have you got background in training people, or what's the energy you're coming with?
Yeah, no, my background is purely coffee. I used to be a buyer, basically. So even managing people, that was a new thing. And Craig and I were a husband and wife team. We started the business when we were 22, and we brought in other young people, and we've taken them with us. We've come with me type of attitude. And it's only that we've got to this stage in the business 8 years in, where we've thought, right, really need to empower all of our team to be able to make those decisions, you know, understand where we're coming from, the context of what we operate within, to be able to take a bit of responsibility for growing the business and sort of like running it themselves, really. So that's kind of something we're really proud of, is like the staff experience that we have, you know, for everyone that's part of the team.
I love the word empowerment. Paul, tell me.
It was really funny, because we met in 2013. They had never sold a coffee machine. They hadn't even opened a roastery. And we sat in a hotel in Liverpool, Manchester.
We were really late, like as in shamefully late, 2 hours late on the M62 from Leeds. Nightmare, yeah. But Paul, thank God, like, I don't know how, but he stayed. He knew, like, I don't know. You were amazing, dude.
I stayed and waited, because there was something when you spoke to them on the phone. So I waited. I'd done some paperwork. They came in. And then we've worked together for, you know, 8 years. We actually moved or opened an office in Leeds, because we thought Leeds was so exciting. And that was down to Holly's and Craig's passion. And we've just seen the North grow, and the commitment to quality and the commitment to the commitment to experience is excellent.
Marco, it's important, isn't it, training? You've been training people for decades, and the empowerment of people in the industry, to baristas, and to what Holes is bringing into the future. Have you got any points to make to Holes and what the future holds?
Yeah, I mean, I think training is a very opinionated subject in a way, because it's like, people generally train how they can do it. So if you have a complete quirk, everyone will be doing that at the end of the day. And I think that training is how you approach it. We learn more and we add it to the training, but in another way, you really have to just stick to your menu and teach people how to deliver the menu, because it's such a big subject. You can go off down all sorts of roads and waste hours and hours and hours. But training at the end of the day is, you need people to make five drinks. at the end of it, and you never lose focus over the fact that the point of this day is that I want this young lady to produce five drinks and deliver them perfectly at the correct temperature, which is another third dimension to what we do, you know, to people. And it's like, this gets lost. Training is often like, look how much I know. I go into the weeds of it. I go into talking about this and that. It completely doesn't help you when the doors open and it's your first day. My job is to get people ready for a very, very long day at work where, you know, they'll have a terrible day if they don't listen to me.
So training leads to empowerment, Holes. What does the next 6 to 12 months lead to for you, for your husband, for the company? Because this time next year, the London Coffee Festival might be a different place. It might bounce back. Or maybe people are feeling a little bit like, oh my God, we're working so hard, but the money's not coming in. So training, empowerment, the next 12 months?
Yeah, training and more empowerment. No, I think, we've had phenomenal growth online where we're reaching direct consumer. And I think, you know, what Marco's saying is really crucial because quality is the door opener for the rest of that conversation. So if you can teach someone how to make an amazing cup of coffee, like regardless of all the other bits that surround it, that's how they start the conversation. And that's kind of what we're really interested in, is how we make it easier and easier for more customers to come into this side of the industry and buy good quality impact-led coffee, basically. So that's what we're focusing on the next year.
I don't really think I want to follow that, because I think that's a correct statement to finish on. The one thing I would say, it's worth a visit to the roastery if anyone's in Leeds, and it's also worth Arthur grabbing some coffee at this last stop of the London Coffee Festival.
Oh, I'd love to try some of your coffee, Holes. Thank you so much for speaking to us. I'll speak to you again soon. Cheers.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
The Coffee Table with La Marzocco Espresso Machines, handmade in Florence since 1927.
All right, Paul, this is a real whirlwind. It's the Coffee Table at the Coffee Festival. We're speaking to Paul Kelly. Paul, we've been walking around the festival now. We've interviewed a couple of people, and we're here now at Minor Figures. You're going to introduce me to Brian, is that right? Tell me a little bit about why you're excited about this company.
Well, one, I like working with Brian because he has a lot of energy. Two, Minor Figures are a great partner. But we do a lot of work on road shows. La Marzocco, Minor Figures go out on the road, introduce coffee, coffee machines, coffee experience, and alternative milk in a way around throwdowns. And Brian is a key partner. But I'd like Brian to talk to you about this because it's great to hear it from his perspective.
Oh, hey, Brian, nice to meet you. So you're from Minor Figures. I've seen the brand grow. I've seen it on the high street now. I'm seeing it in the shops. But tell us a little bit about it, because I know that you're sort of a bit more left field, aren't you? But super successful so far. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what's going on here with Minor Figures.
Yeah, sure. I'm Brian. I basically look after anything between Minor Figures and the coffee industry, having worked at lots of roasteries before. Right now, I think the big focus for us, I mean, obviously alt milk's been a huge boom. A lot of people going a bit more plant-based, but being able to work with Paul here lately means with these roadshows, we've been able to go a little bit further outside of London, so places that might not have kind of got the industry firsthand. So today at the festival, what we're focusing on is just throwing a bit of a party, lots of crazy psychedelic projections, getting people to try our product, getting people a little bit more familiar with the brand itself, and just kind of having fun.
Is oat milk with a twist, or is it just oat milk on psychedelics, or you know, what's the concept, and where are you driving towards?
I mean, it's just oat milk, basically. I mean, we're all baristas. All of us have worked in the coffee industry. So whenever we set out to make a product, we wanted to make sure that coffee was the focus. If it didn't work with it, why are we putting it out there? So all of us here today are making sure that we've got five different coffees on, showing our oat milk with these coffees and getting people to understand the differences between the black coffee with our product and just trying and having it their way, man.
We're interested, Brian, because, you know, we're coming out of what's been a Brexit and a COVID. Business is booming, as we can hear inside the festival. But over the next 6 to 12 months, there's some important structures that need to be put in place to make sure that business does boom and the industry bounces back. Have you got any insights in that?
For us, really, it's been focusing. I mean, again, talking about outside of London, we've been so London focused for quite a while. Until we actually have a lot of these other routes to market outside of the UK, we're just trying to grow our base a bit more here, have a bit more presence. And these sort of events is exactly how we're going to do it.
How do you work with baristas? And obviously, you've got a brand, you've got a product, which is maybe slightly different to some. We won't mention other names. What kind of process do you put in place to train young people in the industry to pick up a product like yours and put it into coffee?
Well, thankfully, we've got quite a few regional reps. All of them are really good on the coffee side of things. So whenever we go into a new venue, we always offer them a bit of time to understand our products, to do a little bit of training with them. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much number one, man. If you don't know how to use it, then what's the point? And the other differentiation I want to jump on is we kind of joke around with a kind of marketing slogan of high on acids. A lot of folks have said our product maybe is a little bit more acidic. Screw it. We're going to own it. It's been doing really well for us. And a lot of folks think it's a little bit more representative of the coffee itself. So we just want to let that coffee sing, hence making the product that we do.
And Marco from the Coffee Table, Brian's talking about, you know, how oat milk is a little bit more different. You know, the business model is growing. But you've come from a historical background where you historically used dairy milk. What's your opinion on a product like Minor Figures and where the oat milk industry is going?
I've got to be honest, as a barista, essentially, I would say that the oat milk is the only sort of the first step outside of dairy. It's a similar to dairy, it's creamy, and it actually works in a cappuccino. There's a lot of milks out there, hazelnut and things like that. They just don't work. And if you want to drink an alternative milk, that's one thing. But if you want it to behave like dairy in the coffee shop, there's a very limited amount of milks that you can use. And so do you want to give a bad experience to the customer because you insist on using coconut milk? Or, you know, do you want to use a milk that behaves, looks and tastes like something, you know, they had before? And I think oat is the one that works outside of all of them.
What's your point on that, Brian?
I mean, that's why we've done this product. It is just the easiest one, it's the most sustainable one that we can do in the UK with British grown oats as well. It made sense.
And Paul, just to ease off on this, because we've done a lovely interview here with Brian, you're excited about this product, you're excited about this business. Give us a little bit of your point of view, because you've seen this industry grow, oat milk's on the map now, but Minor Figures are doing a great job with it, right?
100%, that's why we partnered with them. You can hear the background noise here and how it's building. And it's basically because this place is getting busier and busier, and it's exciting. And in the experience that Minor Figures have done in a walkthrough, taking the time to build a stand that is so different to everyone else, is an absolute pleasure. And I think it's really interesting to work with them and work with Brian's energy and the whole team. So we're very proud of our partnership.
Brian, so different to everyone else, is that right?
Sure, man. I mean, it's just a little bit unique. It's just fun here. It's a party. That's what we're here for.
Right, thank you so much, Minor Figures and Paul, for showing us around.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
The Coffee Table with La Marzocco Espresso Machines, handmade in Florence since 1927.
I'm Arthur Potts Dawson. We're here at the London Coffee Festival. Coffee everywhere, so you can hear my voice is slightly elevated. Paul Kelly's showing us around and introducing to us to a number of people. Now, Paul, we've come to speak to Mo at Sustain Coffee. Tell us a little bit about Mo before we speak to Mo himself and why it's so exciting to be here with him in the festival.
I love the look on Mo's face there where he didn't know what I was going to say there. Mo, don't panic, it's all good. Listen, Sustain started a few months ago roasting. I think they're a very exciting roastery. Mo's knowledge on specialty coffee and community is outstanding, and I think they're going to do really well. And I think you should hand over to Mo to let him talk about himself for a little while.
Hey Mo, it's really good to meet you. I've just tasted some of your nitrous coffee. Delicious. Tell us a little bit about Sustain Coffee, what you do, what type of roasting. I mean, I know you're fairly new in the scene, but it's very exciting to have new energies coming into the industry. You wanted to talk about a number of points that Sustain are doing. So tell us maybe a little bit about sourcing, your beans, how you roast. So give us a little bit of lyrical stuff.
Beautiful. First of all, thank you, Paul, for the introduction. My background first, I would like to start with my background. We've been in the industry for the last 15 years now. And we are kind of considering the story and then now the innovation. Our point of strength is to link the two together. So we started with the second wave coffee, which is like a coffee medium roast, dark roast, profile to create the chocolatey flavors mostly. And that was my 15 years so far. And then I started traveling to origins such as Costa Rica, Kenya, Ethiopia. And I just went to the tree, took that fruit and ate it as it is. And I figured out a lot of aromatics and fruity flavors that so far I couldn't have in my experience with the second wave. Therefore, Sustain started. That beautiful moment when I was at high altitude in Costa Rica, I said, okay, I love what I've been doing so far, but finally I had that beautiful magic moment and I knew what I needed to do. I needed to develop those flavors and bring them to the market, as is the cherry on the tree. Therefore, from that moment onwards, I couldn't afford to have my own roastery, so I gypsied gypsied around, roasting here, roasting there for almost 2 years. And finally, now we're going to have our own roastery coming soon in Hatfield, Old Town, with a beautiful Giesen W30. So the whole mission is to source the highest quality at high altitude, single origin, and roast them lightly to develop a very delicate and fragrant profiles. Any coffee that you buy from a different farmer, it can be delivered in different, many, many ways. And that's where the fun is. We can take a coffee from Brazil that is at low altitude, that it comes around the chocolatey flavors. When you have the same coffee from Guatemala or with Central America, it will be slightly more fragrant and different. When you go to Ethiopia, we go more about cherry flavors, lime, passion fruit. And I fall in love with all this kind of the same bean that can deliver such a big, vast range of flavors. We go around 850 aromatic compounds. And yeah, that's what I do every day. Enjoy sourcing the best quality coffees around and profile them on a daily basis and impress my customer. I love to see that beautiful face when they have a sip and they go, oh, that's different, that's new. And that's all the hard work from the farmer to the roaster to the barista.
Paul, you talk about bringing Mo in and talking about sustained coffee, but you know, Mo's actually saying fresh, new, vibrant, you know, important. It's vital that new companies like Sustain are coming in and really painting a new picture for coffee, both in this city and around the world, right?
100%. You know, it's important that we refresh this industry with new ideas, new energy, new thought process, you know, new connection with different farms. You know, like food, the coffee and coffee, the palate is personal, right? So people that like different coffees from different places. Marco, I'm bringing you in on this.
Marco Arrigo, coffee table.
In what industry would the biggest company, the Lamborghini of machines, be helping a guy who started 2 weeks ago? In what industry, tell me? Yeah. None, you know? This is a very, very small industry where the biggest player stoops down and helps up all these guys that want to come into the industry. You know, and this is the beautiful thing about this world.
And are you feeling that, Mo? Have you got enough support from the industry as it exists? And how do you see the future in the next 6 to 12 months for you?
I really see the industry moving in a very good direction. Because, as I said earlier, I've been around for 15 years. The industry was basically ruled by big players. Nowadays, things changed a lot. As you can see in this room, everyone is trying each other's coffee. Everyone is tapping on the shoulder to the other roaster saying, I like what you do and I like what they do. So there's a lot of support out there from the different competitors. And how I see the future, I see like this community going towards the fifth wave. Well, we're currently sitting around the third wave, which is all about making things with a maniacal precision. And we're moving towards fourth and fifth. And what's going to change that is basically the community, how small people and small roastery like mine, with the help with other roasters, sourcing better products, help each other to gain more knowledge and drive the industry towards more excitement and innovation, basically.
Innovation, knowledge, support, culture, community. Paul, that's why we're talking to Mo, right?
100%. And I think he just summed up something beautiful. You've got a row of roasters here that in some people's minds should be competitors. And for them to be tasting each other's coffee and talking about things and discussing trends and styles, that's something special. And I think that's key about this industry. And I think it's key the way Marco talks as well about energy and commitment from Lamazocco. That's what we want to do. We want to keep this growing because we love it.
Marco, energy and commitment within the coffee industry in London, what do you think?
I think it's beautiful. I mean, in what industry would the MD of Mazzocco know a bloke who started 2 weeks ago and be helping him? And this is the thing that's lovely about this, is there's this, everyone appreciates how difficult it is. And so they go to each other and go, wow, that's really nice. Let me try this. Let me try that. And that's what's going on in this room today.
Fantastic. Mo from Sustain Coffee, congratulations. Keep it going. I want to see you here in 12 months.
Thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Marco. And I hope to talk to you soon and enjoy with you new products and new profiles.
I'm so excited. The coffee table's rocking here at the Coffee Festival. Thank you so much, Paul, for showing us these people.
And I think, Mo, you should fill Arthur's bag with a few special coffees, because he's been getting some training from Marco for his home setup as well. So that would be great.
Yeah, I'll have to get some from you, Mo.
Arthur, I really enjoyed many of your dishes, and it is an honor for me to make you try my coffee.
That would be a pleasure, Mo. Thank you very much. It's great to see you here.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
The Coffee Table with La Marzocco Espresso Machines, handmade in Florence since 1927.